The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Good afternoon. This is Man in Line on Manx Radio. Your chance to have your say about, well, anything really today, because we're open line till 1 o'clock. Treasury's extended a consultation looking at changes to the Isle of Man's Rating and Valuation Act 1953. It's on for another month. I don't know whether you heard Paul Quine, former Douglas Central, Douglas South MHK he was, who kind of inspired Stu Peters, the middle MHK, to bring forward this motion to Tynwald, calling for a referendum on net zero policies. Paul Quine says he's encouraged by the response so far. This is not about whether net zeros are a good or bad thing. Apparently, the kind of argument of that will be afterwards. It's about the principle of having a referendum. And the idea is to have it on the date of the next general election, which is less than a year away, Thursday, 24th of September next year. It'll be so. Everything will be there. All the polling booths will be there. All the polling stations will be there. All the officers will be in place. It's just a matter of putting another set of boxes out and issuing another set of tickets, I would imagine. So in terms of cost, it wouldn't be a vast amount. Paul Quine really says this is about getting the interest in politics up, and more people will turn up if there was a referendum on the net zero, whether or not, you know, they should have another think about it, whether the people should have their say. Anyway, any thoughts on that, by all means do get in touch. And this thing about the rates is very interesting as to what's going to happen. This consultation seeking views on proposed amendments to the Rating and Valuation Act, extended for another couple of weeks. Impact assessments contained within the consultation document have been updated following feedback related to issues with data quality and the complexity of extrapolating data from the rate system. Wow. Well, you can get a printed copy of it by calling 685980. If you want more information, you can go to consult.gov.im. This is all about the rates and anything else. And lots of people are still sending me recipes in for bread and butter pudding from last week when we talked about tea cakes being a good idea for bread and butter pudding. Peanut butter and banana on a hot cross bun. It was about hot cross buns, wasn't it, being available. Easter cakes being available all year round. And somebody said hot cross buns. Tea cakes are a very good idea for. Anyway, more recipes to come, I would imagine. And Robert's on with us today. Hello, Robert.
Hi, how you doing? Am I broadcasting?
I hope so, certainly, because if you're not, I'm not.
Oh, we're all on then. Question for Laurie, if they're available. Are we on with Laurie?
They're on tomorrow. You're premature, Robert.
Oh no, I've missed it. I was all piped up. Now, I haven't got much to say, to be honest with you. I'm just getting over a cold.
Oh, dear.
I mean, the weather's good, isn't it?
Well, when you say good, compared to what?
Well, it's a bit PC, but it could be a lot worse.
Yeah. But anyway, Laurie Hooper's on tomorrow with Joni Farragher. So if you want to give us a call tomorrow.
I'll get them tomorrow then.
That'd be fantastic. Thanks for that. Go to hot cross bun time, I would imagine. Thanks for calling today. Peanut butter and banana on a hot cross bun, says Billy the Plumber. How about that? Peanut butter and hot cross bun. It's my belief that some people now have health issues due to the vaccine, and some people have health issues due to getting the COVID infection, says Keith. Well, this in your shoes thing is still around. There are still consultations and meetings with Manx Care. If it's something that is concerning you, then by all means, simply pitch up and say hello to them. Michelle Haywood was correct about the new 20-mile-per-hour zone, says 437. People that normally do 40 or 50 in a 30 zone will be doing a safer 25 or 30 in the new 20-mile-per-hour zones. I think it's great stuff, says Mike. Laurie Hooper stated that there are only two political parties on the Isle of Man. You forgot McVadden and Fohaloo. They may be in some people's thoughts as terrorist groups, but still exist, says Francis. How do you know all this, Francis? You're not making all this up, are you, Francis? I think we were talking about the fact there are only two political parties in Tynwald, the Manx Labour Party and Liberal Vannin. Are in there. But anyway, do get in touch. Give us a call, Francis. Break cover. Say hello. The poor visibility is Manannan's cloak or caused by other means. What is it? It's you're not going to be telling me that Manannan's cloak is a chemtrail, please. Yes, Paul Quine, this former MHK, wants us to have a referendum next year on the same day as the election because he thinks it will up participation in politics. And the Isle of Man is not half bad regarding participation, certainly in the general election. I mean, when it comes to local elections, it can get a little patchy, but certainly compared to across and elsewhere, and bearing in mind that it's voluntary, I mean, other places compel you to vote. So do you think having a referendum will help with engagement in the political process? This is not about arguing about whether net zero is a good or a bad idea. Whatever it is, it's purely the principle of having a referendum, putting something, a single issue, directly to the public. So have you got any thoughts on this? This is Paul Quine, former MHK.
I've had a lot of people contacting me personally. Stu Peters going with the idea and seeking to bring a motion to December Tynwald is very encouraging, Beth. And also the fact that a couple of MHKs have also spoken to me off the record to say that they also welcome it. So there's quite a broad response and a very positive response, I think.
I'm just going to put to you, though, that Stu Peters, during his interview, said that he was the only candidate who really had this as part of his manifesto in 2021. We know, obviously, you were unsuccessful in that election, but if it was so important to you, why didn't you mention it then?
Yeah, I mean, it's the old saying, isn't it? When the facts change, your opinion changes. I think back in 2021, there was a very strong sort of impetus for the island to follow down the net zero path. We've seen it across the globe, really. A lot of jurisdictions now rowing back. I think even if we look across the water to the UK, certainly Reform UK and the Conservative Party now are very much turning against the net zero agenda now that the true costs have been realised. So I think, you know, people have started to see, I mean, £40 million was set aside in the budget, which is an awful lot of money for the Isle of Man to commit on one thing in order to achieve net zero. And again, as I said before, it's an abstract, it's something that you can't measure. You know, no one can actually quantify what the current carbon footprint is because it's so small. So what we're trying to do is commit an awful lot of money to reduce something that we can't even quantify in the first place.
But then surely this is what you vote for your MHK for. You vote for them to make these decisions on your behalf as a constituent. And if this does get through in December, surely it sets a precedent and we should be having a vote on every single government policy.
Well, then that would be a case for an elected member to bring that before Tynwald. And if Tynwald agreed to have a referendum on whatever the case may be, then they would vote for it, just as we're going to be seeing it in December.
Any thoughts on this? Is what Mr. Quine's talking about relevant, perhaps necessary, or not? Or do you think it's just a fuss about nothing that we pay politicians handsomely to make decisions on our behalf? Any thoughts on this? A note in from Maggie, who tells me that New Zealand has abandoned its pursuit of net zero by revoking a ban on drilling for oil and gas. New Zealand's government confirmed the shift in its latest budget earlier on this year to invest $200 million New Zealand dollars in offshore gas fields. It marks a reversal to an end of a policy announced by Jacinda Ardern, the former Prime Minister, in 2018, when she said at the time the world has moved on from fossil fuels. Her attempted ban has since been replicated in Britain by Ed Miliband, the climate secretary there, who halted all new North Sea drilling after Labour triumphed in last year's election. The New Zealand Finance Minister, Nicola Willis, has consigned Jacinda Ardern's policy to history by announcing plans to expand offshore gas fields. Well, that's what's happening in New Zealand, but what about the Isle of Man? We are, at the moment, nowhere near doing anything with the national gas field that we have that is in... That's our gas field. We own that. I wonder. I doubt the referendum will go ahead as the government's already bought the wind turbine blades, says 762. Let's be honest. Government and MHKs have come out and denied this. Have they? Have they? 762, I don't know. Who have we bought them off for a fact? Wind turbine blades are us? Who sold us the wind? I mean, they're big. You can't hide the darn things. If the government's so short of money, how can they afford to pay the staff at Markwell House who work from 9 till 1 Monday to Friday, says Frank. I don't know, Frank. What do you think? What do you think about that? And what do you think about the idea of a referendum? Do you think it's taking decisions away from politicians? Is it giving more back to the voter... to say, but the fact is, confidence in politicians worldwide, certainly in the Western world, has decreased. The esteem in which politicians used to be held is bluntly not what it was. So would this be a way of actually... I mean, we could be one of the first people to do this. I mean, they've had referenda in Britain, haven't they? There was the one on Brexit. Scotland's had them on independence. What about the Isle of Man? Do you think this would show us to be forward-thinking or just a bit indecisive? What do you think? This referendum idea from the former MHK, Paul Quine. And any thoughts on the rates thing as well? I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are regarding that. Oh, Julian's with us today. Hello, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How's it going?
Well, it's very nice, thanks. Yes, apparently it's really nice in Ramsey, everybody tells me, but it's just a little gloomy in Douglas.
Yeah. Looking at all this thing with net zero, I've noticed, interestingly, that one of the top five wind farm operators outside of Ørsted is a Swedish company called Vattenfall, and they're now reporting that their operating profits are down 54% a quarter at the moment, which is interesting because that's a localized to Europe company, so I'm not quite sure why that they're operating, but it doesn't give much of a good complexion on that, and also they've pulled out that they're more to do with onshore wind, and they've just pulled out of some wind farms that have incurred a $60 million in penalty fees for pulling out of the wind farms. Equinor, who do some wind farms, but they're primarily 70% of all the oil and gas of Norway. They used to be called Statoil. They bought up a bunch of shares of Ørsted, and it's pulled down their value by $400 million since they've done that, which is quite an extreme drop. So I'm not sure. Maybe they have a method in their madness. But anyway, it's anchored them down under the water by $400 million. And I also noticed that I mentioned the other day that Ørsted are going to shed 25% of their worldwide staff, which is 2,000. And there was an interview with the metal union guy in Denmark. And he's saying that there are plenty of the employees that could be reallocated into the metalworking type of thing. So even though, 2,000 are going to be shed, a lot of them are into making all these turbines and the metal frames and the cranes and all sorts of things that do that. But he's saying he's more worried about Orsted than he is about losing union members or this type of thing. So the whole complexion of the wind industry at the moment seems to be in complete disarray, doesn't it, I would say,
well,
looking at the numbers.
It is an industrial revolution, isn't it? I mean, this is some, if you'd looked at this, you know, 50-odd years ago, you would have thought it was fanciful. But we are in the middle of an industrial revolution and kind of sustainable energy and what have you is obviously the trajectory. And in previous industrial revolutions, you know, companies have gone bust. The first people into the industry went bust, and then the second people came in and took over. So this is, and the other thing is that £400 million sounds a lot to you and me, but to them, this is a drop in the ocean. These people deal in billions, Julian.
Yeah, but it's very soon after the acquisition, so it just makes you wonder. I mean, maybe it'll change, I don't know. But
the fact is, we don't know, do we? We don't quite know, and this is the thing, that something is definitely happening in renewable energy, but nobody quite knows what it is or which technology in the end will be dominant. Somebody sent me lots of information over the weekend about thorium salt, which I understand there's a Danish company that deals in thorium reactors that are the size of a shipping container, and something the size of a shipping container could power the Isle of Man. And this is thorium. That's something we've not even looked at.
No, I mean, I think it's a fair old way from... I mean, you know, the good thing about thorium is you don't have the waste problems, but the problem is they're not getting the energy yields yet, you know, to get it into any kind of a scale thing, which applies to a lot of these other things that are touted, you know, like heavy weights on cables being thrown down mines and things, and these solar towers with salt in them that, you know... Unfortunately, it only works at certain latitudes. You can't get the heat to run through a complete 24-hour cycle. I also noticed with interest that Ireland's got some interesting problems. I was listening to the MUA committee meeting with the Environment and Infrastructure Board. They were mentioned curtailment, and unfortunately, they've got that completely wrong, because when you shut off turbines because of demand, that is nothing to do with the load factor. So I think they've got their figures the wrong way around. They're adding on in possible amounts onto how much the turbine will run without realizing that they've got the formula completely wrong. But what I did notice, interestingly, was in Ireland, they don't really have switch-off curtailment problems as such, but they do have a curtailment issue. And it turns out that it's to do with the fact that you remember we talked about inertia and the frequency matching between the demand and the supply.
Yeah.
It's almost like you've got to keep that tightrope, but you've got to get the frequency nice and even. And Ireland has got one of the highest commitments to getting renewables in of 75%. And they're having to shut off the turbines because the demand to the intermittency of the wind turbines and the solar are so much that they're having to ramp up the power stations to get the frequency up. So it's not even really about, it's the fact that you've got DC going into AC, but the DC is up and down all the time, dependent on when the wind's blowing and when the sun's out or if a cloud goes past. So they're in an impossible situation where they're forever, as they're increasing the amount of renewables, the frequencies are going all over the place. And what happens is all your electrical bits, like your fridge and your microwave and everything, they're very sensitive to, they're built to have a very, very stringent frequency. And when that starts moving around, you end up, I mean, in the old days, you'll remember that the lights used to sort of dim and then go up. Or if you're in a storm sometimes, you know, that will affect the frequency with the wires not connecting properly when they're flapping about. So that is getting worse and worse in Ireland, and that is actually a factor in their curtailment, but it's nothing to do with shutting it down because they're making too much. It's because the frequencies are all over the place.
Well, and of course, Ireland's problem is that they've never really had any natural resources apart from peat. So they have no coal. They've got, I think, the Corrib gas field off the northwest coast, which is Canadian-owned. That's their gas. But other than that, it's what comes down the pipe from Scotland. So Ireland has to get it right. They're, as a country, they can't afford things like that to go wrong, Julian.
Well, that's right. Interestingly, by the way, I was looking at a wind farm on the southwest of Ireland. So it's literally pointing straight out to sea, straight towards America. It's called, I think, I'll probably get the pronunciation wrong, I think it's Lenamore, L-E-A-N-A-M-O-R-E. So they've got unrestricted access to the wind, unlike us, because we've got Ireland in the way.
Yeah.
And unlike the proposed 65% for Erie Stain, they're getting 40%. And they're not that old. So it's interesting to note that these impossible load factors for the island, if you take one that's actually up on the complete southwest, it's just north of the Dingle Peninsula. So if they're getting 40%, how on earth are we going to get 65%? I just find this impossible.
Well, they've said our wind is world-class wind, Julian.
Yes, but I think they're also missing a trick because to get those sorts of load factors, it has to be always in the perfect direction. The turbine has to be pointing at the right time. I mean, I think they're assuming that the wind is never going to change and it's always going to be in the perfect direction. You've got Crunknery Lay, which will block winds from the north when we get north and northwesterly winds. I don't know. I think it would be quite interesting to see their calculations because there's nowhere near that on the southwest of Ireland, completely exposed to the Atlantic.
So in conclusion, where does this leave us?
I think we need to have an honest, proper look at how they're coming up with their figures for this wind farm, because it seems to be a major part of the development of the island's energy strategy if we're going to go into this decarbonised thing.
So is this this is Erie Stain you're talking about?
Otherwise known as Cairvy Wind Farm.
Yeah.
I also noticed, if you remember a while ago, I did question how that £100 million estimate for the interconnector on the front page of the Courier, yet inside it was saying it was £2 to £2.5 million a kilometre, and then we were multiplying that up to the 100-odd kilometres to the UK from the island. So how at, you know, 2 million a kilometre at 100 kilometres, you get 100 million. But sure enough, in that meeting the other day on the 10th, with the MUA, they did actually say it will be at least £200 million for that interconnector at 100. So,
and who's going to pay
at least
for that?
And
who's going to pay for
that?
Well,
I think it's going to be two. Exactly. And I think it'll be at least 250. And then, if it's Groudle, as Howard mentioned at the time a few weeks ago, how much is that going to cost? I mean, it costs you $100,000 just to bring the cables to a new house that's been built. So if you've got to run it from Groudle all the way to Pullrose to get into the distribution network, that's going to be a pretty penny as well.
Okay. All right, Julian, we appreciate it.
Thanks, Andy. Cheers.
Thank you. 404 says, Andy, if they have a referendum, they should make it for under 40-year-olds only. It's their future, the under 40s. Old people should not have a say, says 404. An age-restricted referendum. Net Zero, says Gary, needs to alter the focus more to economic and energy security benefits of renewable energy, as internet campaigners have made the public doubt climate change, says 299. It's now time for a preservation order on the scaffolding, on the tram houses, on the promenade, or is this government planning to do something within the foreseeable future? They should paint it, shouldn't they? You know, the scaffolding on the tram houses. Paint it. Put stripes on it. Do something. Make it it could be a photographic point for people on the halfway horse tram. Is our Isle of Man being asset stripped by the government? It feels like they have agendas that are not in the interest of the people. We all need to stand up for our common law constitutional rights and make the government act for our people, not sell us out. Says, like the turbine grift and Net Zero, says Manx Will. Well, thank you, Manx Will. A message in that says, oh, I know first, let's... Oh, Robert's with us again. Hello, Robert.
I've got my second wind.
Oh, good for you.
I've got a solution to your renewable solar power energy generation conundrum.
Well, this is what we've been waiting for. This is the man who's going to solve everything. What is it, Robert?
Well, it's not been invented yet, but there needs to be a conditional grant. So, get this, it's grants.solar, if someone wants to wrap it up and set it up. And then get out into the houses and have a sales team and have someone you can call, maybe a bit of AI on the switchboard. You know, they can take pictures of your house and maybe get a conditional, you know, observation about how much it's going to cost. And after 6 years, because they have this thing in America called Solar City, don't they? Have you heard of Solar City?
Yeah, go on.
Well, Solar City is basically whereby, I think it's about 10 or 15 years, but they put solar panels on your house, and they say, well, we'll generate the electricity off that, and then after 10 or 15 years, or however long it is, I'm not sure how long it is, but I imagine it's about 10 or 15 years, we'll give you it all back, and it'll be your house.
Yeah, it's owned by, you know, doesn't, I mean, Elon Musk owns it, doesn't he?
I don't think he does. Maybe he does. I don't know. What makes you say that?
Well, I'm sure if it's the same Solar City company, I think it was started by his cousins. See, I seem to remember that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, fair enough.
It's in California, but then again, everything else is.
Say again?
It's in California.
Well, it would be, yeah. I've been to California. It's a nice place. I think there needs to be a grant solar anyway. I think we need to get our, you know, our heads out of our butts. And
well, the thing is that if we are going to have solar panels here, then the government could start by putting them on their buildings, couldn't they? If they're serious about it, stick them on the government buildings.
I think that's a distraction. I think you're distracting yourself. I think we need to get down into the communities of the Isle of Man. And we need to get amongst the domestic suppliers. Maybe the question is, what rate do the MUA give in terms of electricity feeded back into the grid?
9p.
And if that needs to improve.
9p per kilowatt hour you get.
It's not a lot, is it?
So they sell it to us at 29p, and they pay us 9p back. Good business.
They're making it, aren't they? Anyway, I think that needs to be improved.
All right.
I don't know why it's such a bad event, but that would solve the situation anyway. So if someone wants to do it, or at least get it and put it up for sale for £250 on CDU or something like that and do what you want to do with it.
Okay. All right. We appreciate it.
All right.
Good to hear from you. Thanks, Robert. Yes, Solar City's in California. They basically day-to-day, door-to-door sales of systems that were leased, where customers will pay no upfront costs but agreed to purchase the power generated by the panels for 20 years, i.e. you get free solar panels and you agree to buy electricity for 20 years and then it's yours. It was probably the most popular business model in America, made them the largest residential solar installer, but they got into debt. I think it's still owned by Elon Musk, but you never know. If solar panels and solar power is the way forward for the Isle of Man, why hasn't everybody got them now? If it's so important, why don't we all... I mean, I know we're hardly on the equator on the Isle of Man, but we do get sunshine sometimes, don't we?
Riley's Garden Centre invites you to their Christmas preview evening this Wednesday, full of festive ideas, including decorations, tableware, themed displays and trees. Don't miss the Christmas preview evening at Riley's Garden Centre, Cool Road, Braddon.
Manx Solar Electrical offer wise solar and heating solutions for home and business. We're the Isle of Man's trusted experts in solar panels, Tesla battery storage and energy efficient heat pumps, helping you power your home sustainably and save money. Call 665-800 or visit manxsolarelectrical.com.
Come to Manx Solar Electrical.
Our island's energy reimagined.
When you want the best.
Not ready to say goodbye to summer sunshine? Book a direct winter sun holiday with flights to Tenerife departing Ronald's Way from November to February. Book flights from only £499 per person return or a complete holiday package and look forward to a relaxing break. No stress, no stops, just more time to enjoy the sun and unwind. Visit flydirect.co.uk to book now with a low deposit.
Jump on Granville Glen Railway's family-friendly, not-so-scary hop to Monet train this October 25th or 26th and travel to see Ginny the Witch in her lair. Includes train travel, refreshments and a children's gift from Ginny. Booking essential. Visit gtr.org.uk.
The previous message was brought to you by QVH, the island's premier serviced offices and co-working space in the heart of Douglas. Call 639-940 for more information or visit qvhpremieroffice.com.
It's Tuesday here on Manx Radio at 5.30. Join Kiri Kermode and myself, Simon Clark, for the new series of Countryside.
I'll be catching up with General Secretary Sarah Comish to talk about the new initiative, Manx Farmers for Schools.
I catch up with Charlie Corkle to find out more about the Tractor Run, which is one of the finalists in the awards for the Community Initiative of the Year. I also popped along to Kirkmichael Village to speak to Mike Clegg about the photo exhibition last weekend, Michael, Past and Present.
That's all in Countryside Tuesday here on Manx Radio at 5.30. And don't forget, you can download and subscribe to the podcast for free at manxradio.com.
The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
23 minutes before one. A note in from Colin who said, you were talking about vaping last week. Well, let's face it, health experts say vaping is less harmful than smoking, but that doesn't mean it is safe. Says Colin, there is the idea and the reality of nicotine addiction, because most vapes contain nicotine, the same addictive chemical found in cigarettes. It raises blood pressure, increases heart rate, and makes giving up harder. So there is nicotine in there. And some vape liquids also contain chemicals that can irritate or damage the lungs. And let's face it, we don't really know. There are unknown long-term effects. Vaping hasn't been around long enough for researchers to know the full long-term risks. And also for young people, health experts are especially worried about teenagers becoming addicted to nicotine through vaping, as it can affect brain development and lead to smoking later. The old argument about the fact that vapes were supposed to be there to take adult smokers out of smoking, not lead young smokers or young vapers into smoking. And also the safety of devices, says Colin. Faulty and unregulated vapes can leak, overheat, or even explode. And we're getting stuff through the internet, cheap imports. We really don't know. This is becoming a public health hazard. Laurie Hooper and Joni Farragher are on tomorrow. They're the leaders of the two parties in political parties in Tynwald, Liberal Vanin and the Manx Labour Party. Laurie Hooper and Joni Farragher are the leaders. Laurie Hooper is the only member of Lib Van in Tynwald. Joni Farragher is alongside Sarah Maltby for the Manx Labour Party. So we'll be talking to them tomorrow. And if you have any questions, by all means, do get in touch and chat to them tomorrow. On Thursday, we're open line on Wednesday. Thursday, we're with the students again. The tour continues at Castle Russian High School in the ancient capital of Man. They've always got something to say at Castle Russian. We talked, I think, very candidly about vaping a couple of years ago with them. And Peter's with us now. Hello, Peter.
Oh, good afternoon. It's Peter Murcott here. Now then, Andy, I want to take you back further than you can go and I can go to 1760, when King George III came to the throne.
Right.
Now, he broke convention to some extent because he was trying to, or he sought to, restore the power of the crown, but that's a side issue. In his speech to Parliament, the first, you know, the King's speech, he added a sentence, and I remember when I was about, 17 or 18, I remember seeing a facsimile copy of this in his own hand. And this is what he said to my memory, and I'm going back just a few years now. Born and bred in this country, I glory in the name of Britain. And he went on to say how he was going to have the best interests of the British people at heart. The reason why he said that, actually, was because the first two Georges, well, George I couldn't speak English. He was the Elector of Hanover, and he came over just for constitutional convenience to be king. The second king could speak English, George II, but he used to spend 6 months in Hanover. George III was the first king of the Hanoverians who actually really anchored himself in the United Kingdom. So he said, I repeat, born and bred in this country, I glory in the name of Britain. Now, the question I want to ask you was that a hate crime?
Well, they weren't around at the time, but I mean, nowadays, I wonder.
Well, I've I saw in the paper, and in the whole list of some of the crazy absurdities that we've got going on in this country, that I saw in the paper a brief article of a Scottish councillor who actually said of the constituency where she came from, she was either councillor or an MSP, whatever. She was speaking about the area that she represented, and she said she had been born and bred in that area.
Yeah.
And has been reported as potentially as that could be a hate crime. Now, if we've reached that stage, Andy, I mean, this very fact that such a thing could be reported, we're in dire straits, aren't we?
I just wonder, well, I mean, it depends. I think the police seem now duty-bound. Every time somebody reports something that could be a hate crime, the police are duty-bound to investigate it, aren't they?
Well, I would have thought that at the first instance they would... Yeah, I mean, people can report things, but at the first instance, they'd have a look at it and see. I mean, they'd use... There'd be a bit of common sense here. I mean, could that conceivably, from case law, could that conceivably be it? And they wouldn't, I would hope, feel obliged to spend valuable time investigating something when there are so many serious crimes on the streets. And, you see... When you compare that, and when I talk about case law, in the same paper, there was a case of a person who actually had been convicted of a crime which was certainly potentially or arguably falling within it for what he did. And yet, on appeal, the judge has said that free speech is to be protected, and he talked about the fact that you cannot intrude on free speech, against free speech, just because it offends, disturbs, or even shocks people. The boundaries of free speech, therefore, the judiciary have said in case law that the boundaries are not to be drawn extremely narrowly. Now, if offending someone does not break the rules of free speech, or disturbing, or even shocking somebody, then I cannot for the life of me see how, if you say you've been born and bred in a place, you see, the police will be aware of the precedents that are building up. They'll be aware of the way in which crimes have been defined. And they would form a judgment based on that, you see. And I find it astonishing that anyone would feel able even just to report that. I mean, I would be wondering, there is an offence, you know, known to law, or to English law. I don't know whether it's known to Scottish law, and I don't know whether it's known to Manx law, but there is an offence in the Criminal Law Act 1967, I think it's Section 3, of wasting police's time. And if somebody come to me and said, you know, somebody has said that about me, I'd say I'd just be a bit careful, you know, aren't you rather wasting police's time even in going into that? Now, to distill all this, what we do need at the next election, amongst many other things, is freedom of expression needs to become an election issue. We need to resist any attempt to introduce this so-called hatred at legislation because it's worded in Britain so badly as to catch almost everything. And we also, and as you know, I've rung in before and I make no apology for this, we also, when the keys resumes, if the safe access zones legislation comes back to them, needs to be thrown out because that really, in certain circumstances, makes it an offence to advise, which doesn't sound very criminal, does it, to inform or to persuade. Now, all those are everyday words. Now, if those become crimes in areas where as I've pointed out before, the premises they're referring to are anonymized, so you don't know where they are.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't have anything more vague than that. And we do need, in the island, there is already legislation on the statute book that I'm not going to identify, but does really need to be taken off it. It was slipped in unnoticed some years ago, and it needs to be taken out. But we do need to be very, very alert to the encroachment upon free speech, because we are gradually, if we're not careful, we're moving closer and closer to Pyongyang. And it's not a very pleasant proposition, is it?
Well, it would have been inconceivable many years ago, wouldn't it, that freedom of expression would have been curtailed. But I think this is an awful lot to do with social media, isn't it, Peter?
I'm not sure. The only thing that I do know from having studied history as well as law, because the two things coincide, because you need to know history to understand the law. When a country is in a fragile state, it always starts having draconian laws about free speech, freedom of association, and so on. They did that two centuries ago, just after the Napoleonic Wars. They were the most horrendous laws passed after that, especially in 1817, with which I'm familiar. And a lot of these laws, I have pointed this out to people, but then this is a sort of specialist thing. The law that was so troublesome in the 18th century and the early 19th century, which was such an intrusion on free speech, was called the law of sedition. And although that's unknown to most people today, yeah, sedition bore a very, very uncomfortable, striking resemblance to your hate crime. And it was very easily proved, and it was very difficult to argue against it, yeah, until you got Fox's Libel Act of 1792. But before that, it was a most troublesome thing. Now, when a country, you can always tell the state of a country by the way in which they govern. And when a country is really very nervous, almost, the first thing they clamp down on is on freedom of expression. And then perhaps freedom of movement. And it isn't the sign of a healthy country,
okay,
the way we're going. Now, we need to have a very in-depth debate about this. And I think the forthcoming general election is going to be a very good forum where that can take place.
Okay, all right. Appreciate it, Peter. Thanks,
yep,
for calling today.
Thanks, then. Bye-bye.
Good to hear from you. A note in from Derek, who just said, does that mean if you tell somebody there's a boat in the morning, that's a hate crime? Well, this is the story of Claire Mackie-Brown, a councillor in Falkirk in Scotland, who said, I was born and bred here. And somebody complained, said it was hate speech, and complained to the police. She says the complaint is malicious. She was just speaking out on behalf of a local resident. Any thoughts on that? And what Peter had to say as well about freedom of expression. Do you think this has anything to do with the fact that social media amplifies absolutely everything, almost out of proportion? My opinion to the consultation on rates and charities, I think, is a cover-up for government incompetence. Clause 74 of the Rating and Valuation Act says that churches and chapels shall not be liable to rates. No person shall be rated or liable to be rated or to pay rates for in any respect of church, chapel, meeting house or premises or such part thereof, and shall be excluded appropriately to public religious worship, or for in respect of any building solely or principally occupied and used for charitable purposes. If you look at the FOI response, the appendix to the request shows almost 300 properties that are exempt from rates. It includes large numbers of residential properties, but as far as I can see, not a single church or chapel. The legislation, says Mr. C, has been wrongly interpreted, and the consultation is their way of correcting the situation rather than admitting another mess. Thank you, David. Good to hear from you. What's happening at the airport, says Kevin today? Well, there was it was delayed because of bad visibility. Apparently, Kevin says there are several police vehicles in attendance on the front door. The reaction to that Scottish MSP after she said born and bred caused the actual problem for what she was reported, says Gaz. Just be a bit more specific, would you, Gaz? The government says we need to be green and move to net zero to attract and keep business. I would argue, says Gaz, it will be cheaper electricity that will attract and keep new business. Again, somebody else has preempted Derek. 228 says, I'm born and bred here, and you can't say there's a boat in the morning, can you? Well, sometimes that will be a lie, because there isn't. But anyway, you know what I mean. Is that hate speech, then, to say to somebody, there's a boat in the morning? I wonder. It was widely announced last week, for the first time in history, renewable energy power globally overtook fossil fuels as the primary source of the world's energy. Isn't it fascinating? This news seemed to somehow escape the notice of Steve. Oh, Steve calls them the climate change deniers and anti-renewable broadcasters. Who's that, Steve? You need to be a bit, just a bit more specific, really. I find it hard to understand how smoking has been banned from buildings and social areas, but vaping is being allowed to happen in public smoking is allowed to happen in public spaces and workplaces. This should be treated the same as smoking. I don't want to breathe the byproduct of smoking or vaping, says this correspondent. What Peter's talking about, says Nick, is very frightening. It's on the verge of extremism, where everybody will be scared if they don't report on their neighbours. They could be in trouble. Law of sedition. And Juan says Peter speaks a lot of common sense. We need to listen carefully. More power to his elbow. Free speech will never die on the Isle of Man, because the government is deaf and dumb. Really?
When the man in line's not on air, call Manx Radio to leave your opinion for broadcast on 682-631.
Are you a small charity here on the Isle of Man? Are you looking for volunteers, hoping to raise awareness and chasing those crucial pounds and pennies to support your work? Well, Manx Radio can help. You could be our next 1-3 Charity of the Week. With daily on-air coverage, podcast and social media promotion, we can help support you and those you help. Just email the numbers 123@manxradio.com and listen out for the feature each weekday between 1 and 3pm. The Charity of the Week, brought to you by Kell Properties.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor May, good afternoon. I mentioned that tomorrow Laurie Hooper and Joni Farragher are on. Liberal Vanin and Manx Labour leaders in Tynwald will be on. Castle Rushen High School students on Thursday between now and Christmas. Lots to go on. We're at Ramsey Grammar School. We're also heading to QE2 High School. The Lieutenant Governor's going to be on. Also, the Chief Minister, Alfred Cannell, will be on towards Christmas. And the DOI Minister, Michelle Haywood, will be back as well. And we got an outside broadcast at the Woodburn Pub. Every Thursday they have a thing called the Woody Club, where they get older members of the community in to chat. It's a big social thing. It's inside a pub, but it's not really all about alcohol or anything like that. It's every Thursday morning at the Woody on Alexander Drive. So we're going to be broadcasting live from there next month. So lots and lots to do between now and Christmas and 2026. Heavens, is it that close? Victoria is not a big fan of the wind turbines. Why in particular, Victoria? It's often said by people, some people who, I mean, if you like, lots of people hear opinion on Man in Line and disagree with it, but don't say anything. And then say, well, on Man in Line, all you get is anti-wind turbine people and what have you. Honestly, you can have your say. That's what Man in Line is about. You have the freedom to have your say. You simply have to pick up the phone, call 66 13 68 and have your say. If you think the government is going down the right path regarding net zero, if you think this is the way to go, that we need the onshore wind turbines, the Caer Vi at Eriestain, and also the Moore Vanin, the big one from Orsted, the 1,000-foot turbines off the east coast of the Isle of Man, by all means, just get in touch and say, I agree. I think it's a great idea. And do you trust the government to do this? Do you think it's something that they can do? And it'll be no problem? I'm a proud Manxman, says Adam, and I'm a Manx Gaelic speaker. So there's a boat in the morning is a terrible example of Manxness. I think it's ignorant. It's a catch-all phrase that certain people say when they can't come up with a proper argument. But do you think it's hate speech, Adam? That was the point of it all. Is it hate speech? There's a Starlight Walk, a star service tonight, 7 o'clock. It is National Baby Loss Awareness Week, and at St Thomas's Church, 7 o'clock tonight, there's a star service. Tomorrow, a little piece of hope, have a candle service on Douglas Prom as well. Have a think about it. Thanks to Chris.